Good morning. Thanks for tuning in to KRBD Ketchikan. I'm Maria Dudzak. I'm joined in the studio by Ketchikan Fire Marshal Chris Grooms, who is here to give us some tips on fire prevention and safety.
Good morning.
Good morning. And is this Safety Prevention Month type of thing? Or
it's Fire Prevention Week, basically last week, but it was focused on the fact that there was a huge fire in Chicago back in 1871. Approximately 2,000 people died, and 2,000 buildings were burned, and about 250 people died. And our government decided that it would be a good thing to have a time set aside focused on that date, which was October 9th.
And is that in particular a time of year? Is October kind of a time of year where you see more fires increase?
It's a time when people start lighting their wood stoves, and that's a potential, obviously. They turn on their electric heaters as well, and we need to make sure that they have 3 feet separating their heater from any combustibles. Sometimes people don't think about it. Heat lamps are another issue. We had one fire this summer. It's very small, but it could have been very big, just from a curtain thrown over a heat lamp that started to smolder and then could have burned. So there are a lot of issues with people smoking in bed or cooking unattended. Put something on the stove and leave it. And those things can happen year-round. So it seems as though fall, there's an uptick just for a few weeks, and then it goes back down. Winter's not necessarily a big time, but it's always good to be prepared year-round.
Have there been any, you mentioned the one, the heat lamp and a cloth or drape over it. Are there anything, have any things been happening this past year or so that come to mind as things that maybe people don't think about but should think about because this could be a hazard?
We had one interesting one this summer in that a smoke alarm itself started on fire. And it came from a pre-manufactured home, and the smoke alarm was installed when it was built 30-some years ago, and it started arcing inside the smoke alarm itself. And I called the company, and they said, yes, that was warrantied for 1 year. And so it's a good thing to look at your smoke detectors, always change your batteries in the fall and spring when you change your clocks. But there are new smoke alarms coming out that have a sealed battery that you can't change. And so you need to look at the back of them occasionally and say, when you install them, how many years they're good for. Some of the sealed batteries are good for 5 years, some for 10. But most all of the smoke alarms have a date of manufacture on, and they should not be used over 10 years.
And I think that's an important point because a lot of times you think, well, I have a smoke alarm, it's good forever, until it totally dies out.
Correct.
And there are those that have them wired into their homes.
That's the newer requirement. They have to be hardwired plus a battery backup. But if you don't have that in your home and you have the battery style, you can continue to use that until sometime that you make a major change in your house, your residence, an upgrade of more than 25%, then you have to change to the hardwired.
And in the ones that are wired into your home, don't some of those have batteries as well? Like
yes, a battery backup.
Yes. So you need to keep an eye on that.
Still need to change your batteries. Yes.
And I know in some places they're quite high in the ceiling. Where is the ultimate place to mount them, both for so they're not going off every time you cook, I guess, but are keeping you safe, and also if you need to access them, you can.
Right. You can mount them on the wall or the ceiling, but there's a dead space in the corner where air doesn't circulate, so you need to stay at least 4 inches away from the corner. And you can put them pretty much anywhere within that or beyond that range. But by international building code, fire code, you're supposed to have one per bedroom and one in the corridor outside of bedrooms. And then if you have a floor that has no bedrooms, you still need one per floor. So a basement, you know, a third floor study or whatever still should have a smoke alarm. And then you don't want one right outside the bathroom door or real close to the kitchen where you're cooking. You don't want it to be a nuisance. If you burn some toast, the alarm goes off. Because most people will tend to take the battery out and then disable it.
And is a bathroom a problem, the moisture?
The steam, when you open the door after taking a shower, that can set some of them off. Because some of them work by, they have a light beam with inside of them, and they, when that light beam is disrupted, then the alarm goes off. So steam can do that, fine particulate smoke from burnt toast or something in the oven, something on the stove, can all disrupt that.
You mentioned having them, is it both inside your bedroom as well as outside?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Every bedroom, inside plus out in the hallway. So another few other things to think about. The fire department has chimney brushes that you can borrow. If you need to clean your chimney, that should be done once a year. All you have to do is come by the station or call in advance if we still have them in stock. Check them out, do your thing with the brush, and then bring it back.
How difficult is it to clean your chimney? Are you doing this from inside your house, or do you have to go outside?
That's from the roof, usually. And it depends on the steepness of your roof and what material it's made of. Some people are capable of doing that, some are not, due to construction.
So are there businesses, I guess, that do chimney cleaning? Are you aware in town? I know there used to be. I don't think there are anymore. I'm not sure.
That's a very good question. I'm new, fairly new here, so I don't know.
Okay, because I know several years ago there were not, and that was kind of an issue for people who can't get up on their own roofs and do
correct.
It. So that'll be good. Something we'll look into to
I will
find
research
out.
That.
But you can borrow, again, you can borrow the brushes for free. So
correct.
At least if you get to that point, you can do that. I want to go back to smoke detectors, and prior to going on air, we had a brief discussion about this video I've seen where I believe it's pretty much teenagers, that age range, where the fire alarm goes off. It's loud, this blaring alarm, yet they are not waking up. And I think that was shocking to me to know that someone would not wake up to that.
Some children, even into their late teens, sleep very hard. And it's difficult to wake them up. And so the technology has come up with a new smoke alarm that you can record your own voice as a parent or a guardian and basically tell them, wake up, there's an emergency, get out, that type of thing.
And that has been more successful?
Yes. The children tend to wake up when they hear their parents' voice. So. But it's good to practice those things at home. It's good to try that in the middle of the night with your own children. Just set the alarm off. See if they hear it. If they don't hear it, you may want to consider investing in that particular style for their bedroom, because otherwise they won't wake up. And again, it depends on their sleep cycle. It depends on how hard they played or worked or whatever the day before.
But and that might be true of adults, too. I mean, some people are heavy sleepers, heavy sleepers.
Right. That would be interesting to hear your own voice. Wake up.
but again, I think that's a good point of practicing things. You know, we talk about having an escape plan, having a family practice, but it could be that type of thing of actually pretending there's a fire in the evening to make sure people will, in fact, get up.
Yes. Last week, Thursday and Friday, I was able to be in 15 different classrooms in schools, elementary schools, and did presentations, some with firefighters present. Most of the time they got called away due to emergency calls, which was that's part of the nature of the business we're in. But one of the things that I stressed was practice a fire drill at home. But before that, I asked the kids, do you have a smoke alarm in your bedroom? And a lot of kids said, no, I don't. And they're relatively inexpensive. I showed them one I had bought here in town for $7. $7 is very cheap compared to a child's life. And it's definitely worth it to purchase one of those. It comes with a battery. You install it on the wall or ceiling, and you're good for at least a year, and then change the battery, and or you can get the sealed battery type. They're more expensive. The voice alarm ones, I think I saw between $50 and $60. But even so, you compare that to the price of Child's Life, it's definitely worth it.
You mentioned that you go into the schools. What type of education do you do with the kids, and is it all age levels?
I targeted kindergarten through third grade this year at the three elementary schools here in town, and gave out a lot of materials for them to take home to look at with their parents. There's some activity sheets. One describes the type of smoke alarms that are available and where to place them. But also just to get them to understand that smoke builds from the ceiling down. The example I used was like blowing up a balloon. The balloon keeps getting bigger as smoke, same as smoke hitting the ceiling, it begins to enlarge and come down towards the floor. You have to stay low. You have to crawl on your hands and knees and get out that way because there's also heat involved with the smoke. And so those are the two main things I stressed.
Have you found the kids are engaged by this? Like, say, not afraid, but feeling more empowered, so to speak, so that they can go home and maybe talk to mom and dad and make a plan?
Well, hopefully they do. That was the point behind that. And if we can get parents involved with the safety of the children, a lot of us take it for granted that we're never going to have a house fire, any type of emergency in our home. And we get lazy about it, if you will, and just say, that'll never happen here. Why do I need to practice? And then emergency happens, and people don't know what to do. By code, through the International Code Council series, schools have to practice fire drill once a month. And they have to have the first one within 10 days of school opening. So some schools also practice earthquake drills so that they're ready for those situations. A lot of schools now are practicing for an active shooter situation. Unfortunately, those things happen, and we need to be prepared to know how to react. Practice helps a lot with that, especially in a home where kids, they play all the time. They know the way out, but that way may be blocked. So we tell the kids that they need to have a second exit from their bedroom, which is a window, and that's also a code issue. The windows have to be a certain size. They have to be no more than 44 inches off the floor. There's a lot of issues with that to help people get out. But also the window issue is to help firefighters get in size-wise.
And it's difficult. There's a lot of older houses here that definitely aren't up to code. And you can look at some of these. And you may be also in a second-story situation,
right,
to think ahead of maybe how will I get out? Do I have a ladder? If it's a building with a elevator, what's the word? A building with an elevator, but that you may not want to use that or may be able to use that.
Right. Always use the stairs if you can. In talking with children last week, two things came up. One was I was telling them to stay low, get low, stay low. And I said, what happens when something happens in the night? You hear the beep of the fire alarm. And they said, I said, you need to roll out of your bed to the floor and stay low. And they said, what about bunk beds? And I hadn't not considered that until now. And several kids, probably 40 or 50 kids, said they were on the top bunk. And, of course, the what-if questions, what if? But the big one was, what if the ladder burns so I can't get down? Well, if it's gone that far, you have more problems than getting off the bed. But you need to get down safely. The other was we had several children that said they had their bedrooms on a second or third floor up. And how do we get down? I said, take this information with you and take it to your parents. Say, I want to be safe in my bedroom. Help me find a way to be safe in my bedroom in case of emergency. And that may mean a really long portable ladder that you can hook on to the windowsill, drop down below. One child, and I have to go for exaggeration, but he said it's 50 feet down. You know, that could be 20. But even that far, I don't want to jump 20 feet down.
Well, and you talk about those ladders, and they're pretty, you know, the portable ladders are, you need some skills, shall we say, to get down them. So that's something I'm imagining you should practice.
Yes, and I have one in my bedroom, second floor, and it's something that needs to get out of the box and at least look at and say, how does this work? So it's a good thing to have, but again, practice helps a lot.
And again, you need to, I imagine, look at your house, check out what potential hazards are, where there are potential escape routes, and depending on where the fire happens, you may have to be creative in how you exit the home.
Correct. And, you know, it's most of the heat sources, your kitchen, your furnace, boiler, those are the main heat sources. But I did go to one house fire that the people had loose electrical plug-ins, you know, how they get worn out after time. And this one was right by the table, and a quarter rolled off the table and landed across the contacts of a extension cord, started a fire.
And it's kind of, what are the odds of that? I mean, that's
really
a pretty extreme and amazing situation, but anything can happen. So
correct.
Probably a good idea to check your plugins and make sure they're all secure.
Yes.
And what about extension cords and things like that?
Well, extension cords are a temporary use purpose. They're not supposed to be used for long term because you have extra connections that could be loose. People tend to plug too many things into them. They're not permanent wiring. I've done many inspections where I found multiple extension cords and power strips plugged into each other. My record is 5 in a row that I found in a classroom.
Five extension cords in a power strip kind of a thing? Or?
Yes, in series. So they were all plugged into one to the next one. That's just very dangerous. It's very easy to overload the circuits. You also create a lot of heat with those, so don't put them underneath the carpet because it will generate heat as it goes through. It's potential that you could start a fire there just being too warm. Also, you don't want to wrap them up too tightly together and use them that way because, it creates the heat and there may not be a way to dissipate the heat. Temporary lighting is another issue. Christmas lights, if you want to call them that, holiday lights, tend to be inexpensively manufactured. And I've seen those in a lot of places that are used, try to be used year-round. And I have never allowed that during an inspection. If it's close to the holiday season, okay, you can use them, but don't use them after the first year, that type of thing.
And I imagine a lot of people string a lot of those together.
As many as they can. As many as they can. So.
And how about that, coming ahead with the holidays and people do their big outdoor lighting displays? Are there special concerns about that? Some people do pretty elaborate outdoor lighting.
The advent of LED lights has helped a lot. First of all, they don't draw very much energy. They also, don't create much heat. And so you can plug a lot more of the LED light strings together without causing a problem.
Okay, that's good to know.
Some of the older ones, if you still have them, are suspect at best. I know I still have, not for use, but just for sentimental purposes, light strings from when I was a child. I won't plug them in and use them.
And those, because that's what we had when I was a kid, and they get hot.
they definitely get hot. Especially the larger bulbs. And it always amazed me that some countries would use real candles on Christmas trees.
Well, and yeah, that was the practice, certainly prior to lights, and I probably in some places they still do that as a tradition. Hard to say.
Yeah, I don't think it's a very wise tradition. But I did want to say, back to the smoke alarm for just a second, there's a theme that is promoted every year and for Fire Safety Week. This particular year is Hear the Beep Where You Sleep. And so, you know, they're not saying anything about where you sleep. It just, hopefully you can hear that sound. And so, again, it's good to practice with your family. You know, you've seen the TV show or the study of people that try this with their own kids in the middle of the night and they don't hear it. We need to go back to something different. But if you have one in every room, bedroom, and you have them in your hallways, hopefully the parents will hear them. They go off rather quickly. And so even just the slightest amount of smoke can set them off. The thing that most people don't understand is that you have maybe a minute and a half to get out. Fire builds so fast. So if you hear that sound, don't take anything with you except maybe your baby brother or sister. You know, if they're in the same room, grab them and get out. But don't take your favorite toy, your favorite blanket, your cat, your dog, whatever. Make sure that you get out and that people get out safely in the family, because otherwise it's going to be a problem. You're going to have a tragedy. And the second part of that is don't go back in. The firefighters' response time here in Ketchikan is approximately 5 minutes. That's a lot of time for fire growth, but it gets the firefighters there fairly quickly, and it gives you time to get out, call from the neighbor's house or wherever, and get the fire department on the road, and then let them go in with their fire gear, because that's what they wear all that for. It's about 50 pounds worth of gear by the time they put on their bunker gear, their air pack, and so on, and they're prepared to be in there. But that won't protect them in the hottest of fires even.
And are kitchen fires a big problem around here each year?
Nationwide, yes. It is a problem because people tend to, they start cooking something, go somewhere else in the house or outside and forget that the stove is on, that they're cooking, and end up with a kitchen fire. And, of course, that can spread rapidly throughout the whole house, and then it's potentially you've lost everything.
And should you in any instances try to put out the fire yourself? I mean, if you have a fire extinguisher, you're in the kitchen and something's going, I mean, what are the rules on that, I guess?
It depends on how far advanced it is. If you notice the pan just started burning, you can turn off, you can cover it with a cookie sheet or something quickly and turn off the heat, move the pan off of the hot burner, that will cool it down quickly. If it's already involved the cabinetry around the stove, just get out. You've already gone too far. The last thing you want to do is put water on it. It's especially if it's a grease fire, they tend to blow up. It's amazing what a half a cup of water will do on a little bit of grease. I mean, it becomes a huge fireball. At a training session I went to approximately a year and a half ago for the arson conference, they did a demonstration and with a very long stick poured a half a cup of water on a burning pan, small burning pan, and it engulfed the whole room immediately. Mm-hmm. It was very amazing to me.
There are a lot of different fire extinguishers out there that you can purchase. Is there a particular type that you should have in your kitchen, your home?
Well, the standard is an ABC, A being for common combustibles, wood, paper, that type of thing. B is for oils or fuels, liquid fuels. C is for energized electric. And generally, you can buy an ABC extinguisher, and they're all combined within one. And that way, you're protected against a lot of issues. I would suggest some people call them, name them by poundage, like 2 pound, a 5 pound, a 10 pound. Some in the industry, it goes by number as far as like a 1A, 5BC, 2A, 10BC, and those numbers relate to how large a fire you could put out. So if you had a 2A, 10BC on each floor of your house, you'd be well protected.
And what size would that be?
Well,
five pounder? I mean,
equates to the 5 pounder. You don't want too big of an extinguisher because you want to be able to handle it. I went into one location, and I don't say where these things are, but it was up in the northern half of the state where I used to work. They had 40-pound extinguishers everywhere. It was a combination restaurant, bar, and hotel. And I said, so do you have a female bartender? And they said, yes. And, they were all excited about that. And I said, how big is she? Maybe 5'2". I said, could she pick this up and use it? And they had to scratch their head for a minute and said, probably not. I said, then you need one here that she could handle. And you don't want to overdo it because you're not there to extinguishers, hopefully to put out a small fire. If not, it would be to help you get out, just to cool the fire enough so you can get out the door.
That's all. How often do you need to replace them? Because you buy them in the store. If you get them from one of the rental places in town or whatever, they have a tag on them. You have to check them annually, that kind of thing. But when you go to the store, just the average store, they don't really have a date on them. They don't tell
Correct.
You if they expire. How long should you keep them, or what should you do with those?
Well, start with commercial. Commercial entities have to have theirs recertified annually. And then every 5 years, they have to be hydro-tested, meaning they relieve the pressure, take the powder out, and put water in. That's the hydro part. They do a pressure test with water, make sure it's still viable, dry it out, reestablish the powder, repressurize it, and then it's good to go for another 5 years. For residential use, we don't do that. Nobody does that. Most of the ones that residential folks buy have a plastic top and valve assembly, and those are not rechargeable. They're not recertifiable. And so if you bought one 10 years ago, it's probably time to replace it.
So they have that gauge on it that says green is good, but you can't necessarily judge that because if you've had it for 20 years, it might be time to...
Yeah, it's probably time to maybe even practice with it. Have your family do a practice with it and buy a new one. It's amazing how many people have fire extinguisher that have no clue how to use it. And so there's an acronym that makes that easier. It's PASS, P-A-S-S. And P is for pull the pin, A is for aim, S for squeeze, and the second S is for sweep. So you aim at the bottom or the base of the flame and then sweep back and forth, advancing from 6 to 10 feet out towards the fire. And then that will put out a lot of fire.
Okay. You mentioned that you do inspections. Are there home inspections? Is that an option that people could sign up to have a home inspection if they'd like an assessment of their home? And if so, are there any consequences, I guess, about doing that?
We do commercial inspections on a regular basis of all businesses in town, mostly done by the firefighters here in town. And then I get to deal with issues that come up that aren't able to be finished with that inspection. Residential inspections, we can do a courtesy inspection. There aren't any consequences, pros or cons, but we can say you might consider having this fixed. Look at this. Or you need to install a fire alarm here, or you need a fire extinguisher per floor, you know, those types of things. Or if we see an electrical hazard, we could say, ooh, that needs to be fixed. That's a real hazard. So it's just we consider ourselves another set of eyes, and that we see things that, you know, I could probably walk through the station here and find a few things that could be fixed. You could walk through my house more than likely and find something, even though I'm one of the inspectors, because we tend to become complacent with things, and we don't see with the same eyes.
It helps to have another set of eyes out there.
Correct.
That see it in a different light. If people want information for their home, maybe for themselves or for their children to get them a little more informed, is there brochures, information available at the fire station?
Yes, we have a multitude of different pamphlets on this, Hear the Beep Where You Sleep. We also have individual ones on fire extinguishers and smoke alarms and safety, cooking safety, and so on. So we have a lot of different subjects that can be covered. If you have a specific question, any of the firefighters or myself would be more than happy to answer those questions.
Okay. We're running out of time. Anything else you wanted to add?
Just be fire safe. You know, I guess the last thing that I meant to mention with the kids is don't play with matches, don't play with lighters, don't play with candles. Even though they have a very small flame to start with, they can burn your house down.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You bet.
Ketchikan Fire Marshal Chris Grooms. Again, you can get more information at the fire station near you.